forward seems too much. When you feel totally out of touch, hope is seeping out the door. You find yourself curled on the floor. The thoughts swirl round, all jumbled and messed. Why is this brain so darkly obsessed? I've secrets I've never confessed. Haven't told a soul I am depressed. A gentle your strength be shown.
Hey there. I've got a bit of a different show today, and I think the whole thing is pretty uplifting, which is why I want to do it. This is Men's Mental Health Month, and I think that's important for us to cover. My guest is Sean Sisk. Sean is a seasoned commercial and entertainment photographer based here in Ottawa, Canada. He's got a career that spans two decades, and he's built a reputation for capturing really compelling portraits, dynamic editorial spreads, and electrifying live music performances. His portfolio includes work with major clients such as Bell Media, CTV, TSN, Pure Country, Faces Magazine, Ottawa Life Magazine. And he also serves as the official photographer for prominent events like RBC Blues Fest and City Folk Festival. Most important thing, as far as I'm concerned, was he photographed Jelly Roll, who was here last summer. And sadly, I did not get to go. But that's a whine for another show. Sean had a really terrifying incident that started in July of 2023. While he was covering Blues Fest, he faced a life-threatening health crisis due to an invasive Group A streptococcus infection. It led to septic shock. He had an incredibly challenging recovery, but he emerged with a renewed perspective on life and a deeper appreciation for his craft. Beyond his professional endeavors, Sean is a proud father, dog owner, and self-proclaimed hat aficionado. He enjoys cooking, watching hockey, and indulging in craft beer. His passion for photography is matched by a zest for life, making him a cherished figure here in Ottawa's creative community. Any more information you need will be down below in his bio, and I'm just going to suggest that we're going to get on with the show. Let's go. As I said, my guest, Sean Sisk. Hi there.
Hello, Elaine. Thank you for having me. Very nice to officially meet you.
Yeah, it's awesome. We're both here in Ottawa. We have been for ages. And I have wanted to get you on here for a very long time. I will say, you know, here we are in June. It is Men's Mental Health Month. And I think we have to say first and foremost, when people hear your story, there's a lot of mental health involved, not just for you, for your spouse, for your whole family. This is sort of an unprecedented blip in one's life. And I say blip fully understanding how I'm minimizing what is is not to be minimized. But, you know, we go through life and we just sort of keep going and we don't realize that the strangest things can take us right out of the game. So I'm going to leave it there and let you give us your story.
I like that you call it a blip, because I hate to let something like what I went through define me. And there was never a moment that any time that I was like, this is me. It was more, how do I get back to be even better than what I was before? As I sat in hospital beds and my hands didn't work, my feet didn't work, and I couldn't walk, and it was never in my head that this is going to be the new me. It was always more like I was this stubborn and I was this much of a pain in my own ass to get to where I am. Why would I settle for this? And no, I mean, nobody wants that doctor, that, you know, the nurse to come in at 5:30 in the morning to take your blood with that crickety cart. And, you know, it's hard to get back. And anything in life that is worth it is hard. And if it's not hard, you don't appreciate it. And I just, and even with this, it being Mental Health Month, we talk about the doctors and the nurses. But one of the things to get me back to where I am, I had to spend a couple of times a week for a number of weeks with a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. When you code and your brain goes without oxygen, they're pretty adamant that you talk to somebody. And I talked to Dr. Bryce, and I used to call her. Well, Dr. Bryce was my psychiatrist, and he had a student, Rebecca. And I wouldn't be here today without Dr. Bryce. As much as the doctors and the nurses, but it's that whole team. And it's those people you see regularly in the hospital. I was in a hospital for 4 months. You see a lot of doctors. You see a lot of nurses. I only saw one occupational therapist, Frankie, who was amazing. Sarah, my psychologist, or the one that gets you back in shape.
Physiotherapist.
There we go. See, my brain's still a little bit foggy.
That's okay.
And Dr. Bryce, my psychiatrist. And without those three people in the hospital, I truly wouldn't be here. They were my team, my nucleus. And those three were of so importance. And talking to, and I'd never talked to a psychiatrist before. Like, there'd been talks. And so to have my own psychiatrist every day, and I think I saw him twice, three times a week. It was truly a gift just to have somebody to talk to that can help you break down your own, like rearrange your thought process to make it make sense to you. And it was such a casual, like comforting way. In life, we fight a lot. We assume everything is going to be a challenge. You know, I ordered buns and there's no butter with my, everything is like that. Oh, I went to the cart and now my cart at the grocery store is a wobble. You know, like that, we don't look at things and go in, man, it's going to be okay. And I really believe that's part of what has gotten us all here. We go in with this negative. We go in that it's going to suck. How often do you tell your friends, man, I love you. I miss you. Let's hang out. We don't do love. We don't do happiness. We go out and go, this is going to suck. It's cold. I don't want to hear it anymore. You know what? So what if you get rained on? So what if you got cold? 15-year-old, you never cared. Life at the crux of it all is for the living. And when I was in that bed, you know, my wife was like, you can read a book. You can do that. Nope. I'm going to get up, because if I get up, they're going to give me ginger ale. They're going to give me Jell-O. As much work as it was, and you know, like I needed help to go to the bathroom. I didn't want that. And instead of just accepting the defeat, how do we move forward? And it's long and it hurts and it sucks. There were tears. There was frustration. There was anger. I mean, you see in the movies and in the TV shows, you know, the guy gets hurt and, you know, they tell him he's never going to walk again. You know, after the commercial break, he's walking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that easy.
No.
It's not at all. And it's not that glamorous. It takes weeks and it takes hours. But life is long and it's what you make it. And there's so much good that to dwell on all of those things, it just seemed to me, I have an amazing wife. I have amazing twins. I get asked when I died, I coded for a half an hour, for those that don't know, four times. One was about a half an hour, might even have been longer. I get asked, did I see God? Did I see light? I saw light in the sense of, I just, even in that stupor, that, you know, state of coming out of a coma, I was just so drug induced that I never spoke to the big guy or however we, but I just always focused on my children. That was the light. And I kind of, looking back, like, what is your light? If your light is to go forward and to see, but to me it was never about going forward or backwards. It was getting back and being involved and being part of my kids' life and taking them to skating, taking them to swimming, going to McDonald's and stealing their French fries. That is what life is about. It's not about all that other crap that we totally make our life about. And I feel through what I've been through, I look back, and as Canadians, we're so fortunate, it's unfortunate that we haven't had any, I mean, for lack of better, big bad things in Canada. We haven't been to war. We haven't had conscription. We haven't had so many things. We had a toilet paper shortage. And Canadians like just about lost their marbles. And at the end of the day, like, we're so fortunate that we don't realize how lucky we are. And that we do have hospitals and occupational therapists and psychiatrists. No, we don't have as many as we need. But that's because we've chosen to think they'd rather keep an extra $20 of their tax money in their pocket than look out for their brothers, their sisters, their children, etc.
Hey, so I'm gonna stop you for 1 second because I want to be sure that the audience understands where this came from.
So now we're going to my story.
Yeah, your story. Okay, I will say that your wife knows my son, and we were all on tenterhooks all those 4 months praying for you and for Aaron and the kids, because it's terrifying. And particularly in our family, Ryan understood that. And, you know, our family's gone through a lot as well. So he understood just how difficult that can be. But let's take the audience back to summer of 2023.
I'm a photographer.
Yeah.
I'm one of the official photographers for Blues Fest. I've been shooting Blues Fest somewhere in around 20 to 25 years.
Yeah.
And this year was one of the first, or 2023 was one of the first years I decided not to go one day because I wasn't feeling well.
Yeah.
And I believe it was for the Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. The night before, I shot Shania Twain, and I guess I wasn't feeling well. I just assumed, you know, it's summer, it's hot, I'm not eating, you know, I'm pushing 50 at this point. Maybe I ate too much cheese pizza, not enough green peppers. We all know the story. And I guess I got home, and I didn't feel very well the next day, and I had a fever, and... But I just assume, like, I have kids that are 9. I just assumed it was, well, by, I guess, by Tuesday night or whatever it was. I don't really have any recollection of June until, like, really October, November. I ended up with a fever, and by the Tuesday, I had, like, abdomen pain. And that night, I couldn't pee. And my fever turned to cold sweats, and my wife started worrying. You know, all those episodes of Grey's Anatomy kicked in, and she thought we should call 911. The ambulance came, and I like this funny part as they, I actually walked into the ambulance. So, I mean, I was okay, I thought. And my wife even said to me, do you need your cell phone charger? I said, no, I won't be there that long. Dangerous last words.
Yeah.
So, and that was about 5:30 in the morning. So between 5:30 and 11:30 in the morning, I went from walking into an ambulance to I was intubated. They, I guess, I'm going to say diagnosed me with invasive group A strep, which is the same bacteria that if your friend has strep throat, they cough. And anyhow, I ended up with this bacteria in my bloodstream. I guess I had a cut on my leg and I somehow scratched my leg. And off to the races we went. And you also know strep A, if it's on your skin, it's flesh-eating disease.
Yeah.
If it's in your throat, it's strep throat. Anyhow, so they figured I contacted this. Perhaps somebody coughed and I shook hands or I rubbed up on a metal post. Strep is all over in our world. I just got lucky, if you will. And in there, I went pretty sideways.
Yeah.
And that led to, I was in the a coma for 6 weeks. Not a full 6 weeks, but 6 weeks, they try to take you out. Yeah. It was a drug-induced coma, but a good, like, good 6 weeks. And I was septic. My heart stopped. I had a full system shut down. The only system that didn't shut down were my lungs. My heart stopped. My pancreas shut down. I had a shocky liver. My my kidney stopped working. I had flesh-eating disease on my legs. They had to take a large chunk out of my inner thigh. And I actually, they took a chunk about the size of a fist of my inner thigh. And I had ended up with a vac attached to my thigh for a few weeks. And yeah, I was on dialysis for 4 months.
Yeah.
I was one of the fortunate whose kidneys decided to kick back in after a little vacation. And I guess here we are. And I mean, being that sick, as I'm sure you understand, and like being that sick and being septic, the sepsis just destroys your muscles. It just destroys everything. I was so weak. And when I came to, I couldn't even pick up a pen and write. I was just basically a blob. I was like, remember Barber Papa back on? Bloop, bloop.
So,
yeah, yeah.
You feel like tissue paper.
Yeah.
It's like you just, everything wobbles.
And everybody just sort of does stuff for you and you're like,
yeah,
I can't do that.
They have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I progressed, moving forward, like the physio, the test, I have a lot of nerve damage.
Yeah.
In both legs and my hand. Sorry about that. I won't drink tea anymore. So moving forward, I spent twice a day at physio at the Ottawa Rehab Center. A lot of tests, neuro, a lot of psychology, neuropsychiatry. But on the funny side, to deem me okay, you have to see a psychiatrist. And one of the things they felt that I was okay is because I still had a sense of humor. And I could tell a joke. And joking is one of the hardest things your brain can do. To remember to read a person and to have delivery with timing. So I just, and that was really what got me through, was those nurses and the staff, just to laugh and joke and to talk to them. And what's funny is even when I was at my worst in the hospital, there's always people worse off than you in that building. The stuff I saw and heard, I'm so fortunate. I mean, as bad as it is, I am so fortunate that, it, you know, not to sound like, but it could always be way worse.
It absolutely could, but at the same time, for Aaron and the kids, nobody else being worse mattered.
No, and I don't even know how she managed. Yeah. I mean, she probably enjoyed the peace and quiet, but there is no peace and quiet when all that shit you're battling in your own head.
Yeah.
And this is, and where it's interesting is your friends don't know what to do.
No.
And like one of the worst things you can say to somebody in a situation like Aaron is, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
They don't have that answer. If you want to do something, just do it. Bring them a meal, drive them, give them money, do whatever it is you want to do. They are in such a state in their own brain, they don't know what's coming and what's going. And just be there. I mean, yeah, but at the same time, just do something. It's easier to go home and find a lasagna is a better place than to message them and say, if you need anything, call me. They're not going to call you because they probably don't remember. Their brain is in protection mode and they don't know or recall any of that.
That is okay. I'm going to stop you again because this is so critically important. This is something we talk about to do with grief. Okay. Grief isn't just when you lose somebody. You can have grief for a lot of reasons, but watching somebody you love be horrifically ill and it going on and on with no, at the time, okay, there were lots of times during
no answers.
That Aaron, not only no answers, she didn't know if there was going to be a tomorrow for you.
Yeah.
And
she was told at one point, we need to amputate his leg. It might be both legs. She's like, what the heck? I mean, they told her my heart stopped. Yes. And the doctors said to her at one point, they're like, he will be different when he comes back. If he comes back. I had a friend say to me, what was your percentage? That's a very TV thing. Doctors don't really say, my gosh, Matt, he's got 2%. It doesn't work like that. They brought my children in and my wife, and they had them say goodbye to me.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think they would make it through the night. Or I would make it through the night. See, I'd like just like separated myself from that. See?
Yeah.
But that's the truth. And poor Aaron is going through this. And people are like, what can I do for you? She's like, I don't fucking know. My husband may not make it through the
yeah.
And I have to go
you
home.
You want to make me, you want me to make more decisions?
And I have to go home and feed my kids. Like, I don't have time to.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And it is about whatever you think you can do for someone. It doesn't matter. If you take them a meal and they throw it out, it doesn't matter. At least you did it. You did something and saved them from one decision.
Yeah.
That is so critically important. And if you have someone who's going through something like this and they have children, go take the kids for an ice cream cone or
show up with a bag of chips and two stuffies.
Yeah. Just like, do something.
Give them hope. Give them something.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had neighbors that would like mow our lawn and shovel our driveway.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's sad though about that through like is when you go through this anything and I've talked to other people, illness in general, you have to be prepared that humans at a basic level can't handle it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're gonna lose friends and you're gonna lose family. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to cope, and they sure aren't there mentally to watch somebody go through hell and back. They're just going to walk away.
And very often the walking away is because they are so shamed at their own actions. We have to, on both sides, we have to give people grace. I know, okay, you spend a year in the hospital, people get fed up coming to see you. It's like, oh my God, do we have to go again?
He just lies there with a blanket on.
Yeah. And, you know, it happens in all kinds of instances, my father-in-law, God rest his soul, a lovely gentleman, but I really felt that he had a fear of death. The priest came 6 times to give him last rites. And after the 6th time, he said, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back until somebody knows, like, this is really it. I've done this 6 times now. It's like, you just kind of have to. There are no hard and fast rules, because whether you're religious or spiritual or agnostic or whatever, okay, this world has miracles. And I am so thankful for that. But we can't guarantee them. We don't know to whom or when they'll happen. But when they happen, let's just rejoice and be thankful.
And love it.
And something else you said that I think is super, super important. We have to stop being so negative about things. But people are negative because of fear.
Yep.
And if you live in lack and fear, you are always going to look at things from the negative. But trust me, okay, in my 20s, when I was early on in pain 24/7, I was an absolute bitch on wheels. Okay, I was not a nice human being. And I now understand pain can make you pretty crazy, can make you pretty nasty.
But once you get grumpy.
Once I learned that, you know, when I'm grateful for all the little things, you start being grateful for all the bigger things that you realize that you have.
Yeah.
And the people around you, your children, your spouse, your dog, your cat, your bearded lizard, your fish, I don't care what, all of those things are things we need to be grateful for. Because the more we are grateful, the less room there is to be negative.
And the more grateful you are and the more you appreciate the little things, the more light you let in, the more the dark leaves. Easier said than done.
Yeah.
But it's about enjoying those small things. And looking at each thing is a victory. You know, even put on your list for the daily chores, shower. That's a goal. You did it. And then don't fight yourself that you didn't, you know, you didn't wash your hair or what have you. You got up. And it is hard to realize that getting up is a win.
Yeah.
Because not everybody gets to get up tomorrow morning.
Absolutely.
And I remember, and you would see this on social media. I believe it's slowed down a bit. But that, you know, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
People would like, you know, and truthfully, after what I've been through, anybody that's willing to think about you, to share love, to share happiness is a gift.
Yeah.
And there's so much we don't understand, but, you know, maybe it's a bit of that Star Wars fan in me that it has to create some kind of energy.
Yeah.
And, you know, this city came together for me and my family and what the community did in the radio world, the music world in the city was just so, the only word I have is humbling. Like, I couldn't do anything but cry when I found out of it. I'm just coming out of a coma and they're doing fundraisers. And these are things you never picture for you. And that stuff that people do is so amazing. And it's those little things, like, remember that, focus. And even when I'm getting better, I focus on that. I get people that say, are you angry? Are you mad? I could be, but I choose not to. I have to consciously choose to direct where my energy is spent. You probably heard it, the spoon theory.
Yep.
And you know, it's that same sort of thing. I want this to have my energy. I want this to where I put my thought. And it takes work. You need to train yourself to think that way. But if you're willing to just accept defeat and accept this is who you are, that's okay too. But I never wanted to accept that. And really, like, it's all of it's a lot, but I'm very fortunate. It was easier having my amazing wife, my kids, and my father, and these people around me to help advocate for you when I was in the hospital, you know, help get my Twizzlers, those little things that we can't do. Yeah. And just being surrounded by the people that you know, love, and trust.
Absolutely. And I think part of mental health, we had Mental Health Month last month, and this month specifically men's mental health. The reason for that is we lose way more men than women to suicide. And the reason for that is because for so long, we expect men to be pillars of strength, to be silent, to just handle everything, which is such bullshit. Okay, as human beings, we all have feelings. Everybody does. Whether you show them or not, you have them. And if you don't show them, they bubble up from inside and you're like a pot that overboils. And that can turn into like a great deal of anger and things that you really don't want. So part of what I want people to understand, not just during Mental Health Month, but I started a couple of years ago doing something I call my flyby hugs. I go on social media, I send direct messages to people, I either send a flyby hug or just tell you much love and hugs, just thinking about you. I'm not asking for anything, and I'm not really giving anything except my thought and my time. And if we believe scientifically everything is energy, then that energy can be beneficial.
And most, you see it. Corey and I, my makeup artist I work with, we get to shoot all kinds of different groups and people. And we shoot. And one of the things I've noticed is, there's no way this isn't going to sound very politically correct, but hear me out. White people are boring. When I work with other groups, they say, thank you, I appreciate you, I love you. They hug. They all get together to their family, and there's like 40 of them for just an occasion. There's no reason. It's just that's the occasion. Like, when was the last time you saw like a white dude go hug his buddy?
Yeah.
They don't say, you know what, it sucks. You know, my wife is mad. I got bills to pay. I'm running this business. My kid keeps arguing. They don't do that. No. They go drink a fifth of whiskey and move on. And they don't have anybody to tell those things to do. It's all about, this is what I do. This is my job. This is how much. I got this big damn boat. Let's roll. That hurts. That's a lot of weight to carry around.
Yeah. Yeah. It absolutely is. And that's, you know, advocating now as I do for ending silence, stigma, and shame. The reason for ending the silence is because silence is what's killing us. You know, people who make an effort to get out and discuss their feelings with other people, especially men, they manage their inner equilibrium better. Because in all honesty, feelings last 30 to 90 seconds. If you let them flow and go, that's what we're supposed to do. But when you stuff them all down and you keep hanging on to the things that annoyed you, or you don't want to say it out loud, you don't want to seem weak, you don't want to, whatever.
Yeah.
You end up exploding at some point. And it's just not healthy. And the fact
is, it hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. But we come from Western medicine that is reactive. We don't keep people well, we see them when they're sick. Okay, if we make more of an effort to keep ourselves well, and that is mentally well, first and foremost, and that will help you to be physically well, which will help you then to make sure everybody around you is also well. But that requires interaction. That requires you to talk about what doesn't feel great. And quite often, what doesn't feel great, or yeah, you said it, my wife's mad at me, or I can't quite seem to get through to my kid, or, you know, oh my God, I don't know why my boss has no time. You know, I don't know why he doesn't listen when we speak. All of those things, if we just stopped assuming and letting people skate by not talking to each other, we just said, hey, are you okay? And actually listen for an answer. I'm not saying we have to fix everybody. That's not the point. The point is
Everybody really needs fixing.
Yeah, exactly.
You just need a hug.
Exactly. But just listen. And when I'm talking about like teens and youth, I say, you know what? As a parent, whatever you're doing, go in and duct tape your mouth with a sign that says, I'm willing to listen. Because quite often, we don't want an answer. We don't want things necessarily to be changed by outside ourselves. We just want to be heard.
We just want to vent.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And being seen and heard, I think, should be an inalienable human right. Whoever you are, if you are unhoused, if you have mental health issues, if you live with a family of 40, doesn't matter to me. I think you deserve to be listened to. And I've said it on this show before, and I will say it forever. But if you just took 10 minutes once a month and listened to a stranger, any stranger, okay? For a lot of people, their neighbors are their strangers. But if you give someone 10 minutes and just say, you know what? I just want to listen to you. Tell me part of your story. Tell me what bothers you. Are you sad? Are you happy? Just tell me. And then just listen.
Even as simple as little things will make your own life better. Open the door for somebody. Say, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
To the person at Farm Boy that gives you your steak every week. Say hi. Hey, how's it going? Wave to your neighbor. When did we become a bunch of people? We walk with our head down. We just keep pushing through. Like when you talk to your son, Ryan, like he's a jovial, happy, friendly person. And people, that's contagious.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And yeah. And that breeds health in itself. And more people need to, if you're going to go out and be miserable and have a scowl on your fight, and you know, maybe that waitress had a shitty day. You don't know what happened to her, but yeah. You know what? It's just your glass of wine. It will get there. Don't fret. Your doctor would probably not want you to have that anyways.
And the other thing is this, okay? I like to compliment people on the things I find fun, fascinating, fabulous about them. My son will tell you I'm Chatty Cathy. I talk to everybody. My husband will tell you it's my goal in life is to say hello to everyone on the planet. And that is the honest to God's truth. I believe that sometimes we are so wrapped up in ourselves. If you say hello to someone or you compliment them on what they're wearing or the light in their eyes or their smile or something, that may be the only compliment they heard that day or that week or even that month.
Yep.
You can turn that day around for them just by making them smile.
What a gift
that is.
It's a huge gift. And that's sort of how I run my photo business. When we hop into the studio, I would rather spend 25 minutes getting to know you and shoot for 5 minutes than shoot for 25 and get to know you for five. Yeah. We're going to get more stuff. And you know, it's easy to tell somebody, man, you look great today. You know, you have new shoes. How are things? Like, engage. And as a photographer, I need to do that to get people out. And you know what? It's fun. It's fun. Like, the stuff that people tell me and the stuff that I get to learn about people. And it just sort of goes with me wherever I go. And my kids are like that. They're like, oh, now who's daddy talking to? do we need to? And life, that's what makes life.
Yes.
That is what defines life. It's all those little things that you carry with you as you go through. To just bullet your way, do this. Corey and I, the makeup artists, we joke. But we have this thing, and Corey is a, I think this is the great way to say it, a gay individual. And we talk, and we get to know people. And we get to meet so many different people. We work with indigenous artists. We work with hip-hop artists. We work with people of different skin color. We work with different people that we've had clients come out to us at photo shoots. Corey and I have worked together for like 20 years. And one of the things that we kind of laugh about is the problem is too many people, it's the rule of eight. Too many people, they just get up at eight. They go to bed at eight. They work with the same eight people at work. They see the same eight people after. They go to the same eight stores. And that's their life. That is their life. Eight. And that's really friggin' boring. And that would make you angry. Because you're not exploring your horizons. You're not taking a chance. You're just assuming you're not going to like anything or anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I try to tell my kids, I would rather you at least try it and tell me you don't like it than just say you don't like it. Why do we do that to our kids? But as adults, we're just like, well, he's above 38. He can just be a sour stick in the mud. And then we wonder why people are grumpy. Like, it's obvious. Like, life is, there's so much good out there.
There absolutely is.
And we spend so much time with this crap on social media. There's a lot of good on social media.
Yeah.
But we somehow get all of that same, like, it amazes me. One of the neat things is if I post a photo of Elton John, it gets 25 likes. But if I post a photo saying, I get to photograph Elton John tonight, it gets 300 likes. That is good. That's amazing. But it's like anything, you need to look. You need to look. You need to find. Life is hard. Nobody ever said to any one of us, when you get up tomorrow, it's day one, it's going to be easy peasy. It's not. Everybody has challenges. Everybody has pain. Everybody is hurt. Go look at Johnny Cash. He sings a whole song about it. And if a man like him has hurt, the rest of us have hurt. And it's okay to have hurt. But with that hurt, look to find, to see. And it'll hurt less. And you don't need to have 38 friends. Have one. It's easier.
It's definitely
hard. It's hard. And I think, you know, it's and I know I sound like a cliche, but, you know, for me, you know, I do little things like, I need to travel with my family. We're fortunate enough, you know, that week away in Mexico or wherever I can bring my kids. Like, I cherish that. Those are the special things. People are like, do you get to go? Oh, do you bring your kids? Of course. That's what keeps me young. I have a job. I'm gifted as all get out to have. Not that I'm gifted to do it. It's a gift to do it. And I'm so fortunate. And to have all of that, and I mean, not only it helps pay for my house and a car, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. But it's remembering all of those little things that we appreciate that get us to where we are. And for me, you know what? There's nothing better than ice cream in Mexico with 2 9-year-olds. And it's those simple things. And we forget that as we get older.
It's true. I believe we need three things in life.
Ice cream?
Oh, okay, four things.
Okay.
Okay. Ice cream. We need to have gratitude for the ice cream and the other stuff. We need to be curious.
Yes.
You have to have curiosity. If you don't, you're not living.
No.
And the last one sort of comes from those. You will have hope if you have those three things.
And you know what? The world today, there's lack of hope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's tough all around, but I've been so fortunate through all of this to have hope.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, and that is, and I can't imagine not having hope. There's many people that don't have hope.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, just talking about this, I mean, I'll tell you, when I was in a hospital bed, I didn't always have hope.
No.
I was angry. I was mad. It wasn't fair. I wondered where are my friends? Where are, you know, those phone calls? I'm sure many other things. And I probably said it with, you know, a terrible colloquial language. But at the end of the day, I mean, I was gifted that I could look past and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And in the city, in this country we live in, we have a shortage of these workers that can do this miracle stuff. And there's a lot of people that, you know what, you know, we have this trouble, but we can still be there for each other. We used to have a neighbor that would bring bread to us when my wife and the twins were born. Do little things, you know, drop off some tomato plants at your neighbor, you know, shovel their driveway, do those, wave to your neighbor, to somebody that's home alone, that works at home, that hasn't had any contact with a person in 2 weeks. That wave is a game changer.
Absolutely. And I have to say, you know, on that note, we have a neighbor. His name is Julian, and I have officially adopted him as another son. He is wonderful because he will come and cut the grass. My husband got a new knee in the fall. I was in the hospital, and Julian just came and did what needed to be done, which is
that's amazing.
Amazing. And he does it for other people. He's amazing. We are gifted here. We have neighbors all around us. We do for each other. We look after each other's homes. We know if people aren't home, we're going to keep an eye out for our neighbors because that's important. But I grew up, well, obviously in a white family. I'm the whitest human being anyone's ever seen. Okay. I'm so white, I'm translucent. My mother and father brought us to Canada with my grandmother and my aunt. Because in Britain, family is everything. And that's just what you do. That comes before anything. My parents gave up all of the furniture, all of the material goods. They came with a single box of dishes. That was it, because it was much more important to bring the family members with us. So I have a more European outlook in family is everything. And I think North America, we've gotten away from that. It's a more nuclear family. Totally. You have, you know, the mom, the dad, the kids, or the mom, the kids, the dad, the kids, whatever that makeup is. It's just that very nuclear group, rather than having aunts and uncles and grandparents, which I think is sad, because I think it's really important. You know, they say it takes a village, and it does.
It does.
It really, really does. And all of these things come together. I'm so thrilled that you are where you are now. I am more thrilled that we get to talk to you today on the show. But it's a hell of a journey when you're watching and rooting someone on when they're going through the most horrific time in their life. And, you know, much love to Aaron and the kids. And I think it's fabulous. Everybody around, including Corey, your makeup artist, who no doubt was as panicked as everyone else.
And, you know, I've got to tell you, share one last story.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Through all of the stuff, and when you're that sick and it changes, I mean, it's like a funeral. There's people that show up at the funeral you least expect, and the people you expect aren't there. I mean, when I got sick and, you know, my wife's world, our world turned upside down. One of the things, girls that I went to high school with, like 30 years ago, they all got together and they made meals and went grocery shopping and they brought over this food. I hadn't seen these ladies in 30 plus years, and we're friends on Facebook, and they got together and they made like meatballs and rice and a bunch of groceries and brought all this stuff over to my wife when I was in the hospital. And that these girls like, Carrie and Mel and Sarah and Sarah Paulson, like they did this, not because they had to, because they wanted to. And never forget, when you're at your darkest, there's somebody that's still thinking of you, that loves you, that is totally, you're totally oblivious to. There's love out there, but sometimes we just don't know.
Yeah,
and it was just so incredible that stuff like that came through.
It's true, and I think it's on us to open our eyes and be more aware of the people around us, because we don't like to be hurt, so let's not do it to anybody else either.
As a photographer, as an artist, we're sensitive people, us artists. And I post photos, and sometimes they don't get many likes. All of us go through that. We post stuff, and there's, you know, the feedback is, you know, you're like, and you're like, this is amazing. Nobody likes it. Well, I'll tell you this, after what I've been through, and those photos that only get 3 likes or 20 likes, I'll never be mad. I won't even be fazed after what this whole city has done for me and my family.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you this, honestly, when I needed it and my family needed it, this city came through as such an unbelievable, I will never be able to pay it forward to what this city gave my family and I. It's incredible.
What a beautiful way to end our time together. I absolutely love what you just said. Sean, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. This is Men's Mental Health Month. Make sure you pay attention to your mental health or the men in your life. Whether they like it or not, ask them how they're doing. And really ask, like, be serious about it, because it's so important. Nobody needs to be silent and strong and take all the burden. It's not how it works. We need to be there for each other.
It's okay to be hurt.
Absolutely. And letting someone know and letting someone in can be the greatest gift to yourself you can ever have.
There's some pretty amazing people out there.
There absolutely are. Thank you so much, Son.
Elaine, thank you. You're amazing, and thank you for doing this. And please, don't ever stop talking. This is a great story to tell. All of it.
I think my family would be very upset if someone told me not to stop talking. As I said, Sean Sisk is my guest today. All the information will be down below in the show notes and all of the ways that you can get up Sean. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness, and remember to make the most of your today, every day, and we're going to see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service, and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Truul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach Program in Toronto. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to SZF42.com. And for our American listeners, that's SZF42.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again.